recognize her.
No, I didn't recognize her. She's out of summer. She's relaxed. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It just occurred to me. I was like, that's Kathy.
Good evening and welcome to the Monday, June 26, 2017 regular board meeting here at the Education Center. Time is now 7:17. We are reconvening after convening the meeting at 6 o'clock where we had some executive session items to take care of. Agenda addendum items will include going back into executive session between items 12 and 13, thankfully after you're long gone. Any other agenda addendum items?
No.
Then, Joelle, if you could take us away with item 5, recognition and presentations, please.
I'd like to introduce Bonnie to come up and present the BEA Friend of Education. Okay. So, good evening. I'm Bonnie Montanil. I am the president of the Russell-Broadview Heights Education Association, and I'm so excited to have a positive speech I get to do today. Okay. So, Friend of Education, a little history behind the award. The award was created to recognize either individuals, informal groups, formal organizations, companies, corporations, who have significantly contributed to public education. And we have a committee that meets annually. We ask all of our staff to make nominations of people that we should consider. And then the committee calls the president and says, here's who we've decided upon, or they'll sometimes say to me, we have two, and there's a big decision to it. This year, I was contacted, and I was told this year the award will go to the consultants. And it was like, it will go to, and we were so excited, and I thought, I can't wait, because after they make the decision, we ask for anecdotal stories to come from those who nominated. And that's when I often get to know who the recipient will be. And so the PSECs are getting ready to move. They are headed to Florida for an exciting transition for their family. We will be very, very sorry to see them go, but we know that there has been a foundation laid here that really, I feel totally confident that you guys are gonna just do so well in your new setting. When we look at contributions to public education, there are things that happen that are for the community at large, there are things that happen in the school itself, and then things that happen in that classroom, very personal to each and every child. What I learned about the PSECs is that Heather has been an extraordinary volunteer, whether you're talking about through the PSO that benefits so many, whether you're talking about being a new mom, or being the volunteer that is willing to sit and do the task that takes hours and hours to do, and you really have to think about it. I heard about books and leveling of the books and labeling them. And what you set up, that personal library that went into that room, will serve kids for years to come. I heard about the transformation that happened outside at Chippewa and beautification that occurred that wasn't just for one group, one time, one moment. That's beyond. And a lot of families, there is one family member that is lent to the district to do everything. But that's not true for the PSECs. It is a partnership. And Jerry isn't along to do what Heather tells, although I got a feeling that sometimes that happens. Jerry's background and his knowledge of math and science were utilized within Kathy Roderick's STEM initiative. And basically, whatever he could do to contribute, he did. And something that happened with the PSECs is they never sought out recognition for what they did. That was never about what they did. They were the quiet volunteers who got it done. And now, granted, personally, they may have been touched quite a few emails, nudging people on how to do things. Everything was done with love. And that translated into something for their children, for their classmates, and for the greater school community. And it transcended one building. It went on at each step. What I think that the PSECs have done, what we wanted to recognize, is you gave of your time, you definitely gave of your collective talents, and I think for your children and for the children in this community, you showed that it would become the family tradition. I think that when your children become parents and involved in the community, they're going to assume that this is what parents do. And so we, as an association, want to recognize that, and we want to present to you this plaque, and we want it to find a home in your new home in Florida, and we will deeply miss you, but we are sincerely inspired by you. So thank you.
Took time to go through your buildings, went through every single line item in these reports and reviewed building drawings, generated our own validation, and what we're going to show you tonight is the comparison between those original assessments and the validation costs. It's a lot of technical numbers, and I'm sorry it's not going to be very exciting, but we'll try and go through it quickly so it doesn't get too boring.
Sorry, just a quick question. Sure. So is there ever a reconciliation? I mean, if you, your findings are different from...
That is, yes, and that's what we're presenting.
Okay.
So we sent, I sent a letter to Jeff Tuckerman, and please, at that note, feel free to interrupt me at any point. We've gone through and we've updated those original assessment reports to represent that validation and that reconciliation.
So you get, you reach agreement then whether there was discrepancies?
Yeah, they agreed to everything.
Okay.
We sent it to Joelle and Chris Code as well for their insight to make sure that they agree with the items, because we did have a lot of meetings with them going over these line items. So I put on my glasses. Getting old sucks. Okay, so in summary for the people in the audience, the OFCC, it's a state agency. They provide funding for renovating and rebuilding schools across Ohio. They send out the building assessors, the team of architects and engineers, and they review all aspects of the building and the site. So from the carpet to the floors to the asphalt paving to the roof to the electrical and mechanical system, every building component is evaluated. They place that in the web tool, that information, and that spits out a report with scope and cost. So Hardlines conducted your elementary school assessments. That was the architecture firm, and Harrison Planning Group did the middle school. So when I talk about all these components, there's a 23-point checklist. We call them A through W items, and I'll show you those in a minute. And the total of those items give you your projected renovation cost. The last general item is what we call a two-thirds rule. So this is what the state uses to determine, should a building be renovated or should it be replaced? They look at the cost of renovating the school building, and then they compare that to the cost of replacing that building with the same square footage. They compare that, they divide it. If the cost is two-thirds to renovate compared to rebuilding, and that's 66%, the state will recommend to replace the building. Now, keep in mind, it is a recommendation. You still have the ability to renovate that building with OFCC co-funding, but you have to go through a waiver process. And it's not too bad, as long as the building is at 99%, and you can prove that it will serve your educational program after being renovated, they're usually good with it. Is there any questions on?
Just that, I mean, that funding, though, we're at the bottom of the list.
Correct.
Priority, so
5%.
Holding out for funding is...
Right. So if you go through the ELP program, you can get your building project done now. What it allows you is not have to wait for your term, I'm sure you're aware. So you can get the projects done now at 100% cost and then get reimbursed that 5% from the state later. The benefit to that is, construction costs are escalating at a very alarming rate right now. We saw a 2.5% increase where the previous years there was 0% increase, and I just heard the other day that next year the cost increase is expected to be about 5%, because there's just a huge demand for school construction right now. So the benefit of doing it now lets you get it done at reduced cost rather than waiting in 4 or 5 years when your term comes up. Okay, so we're gonna look at these validation costs for Central Elementary. We'll start with those first. We just have a few pictures that kind of show some of the general conditions at the building. And you can see up here, the picture doesn't show well, but we have a lot of standing water on this roof that occurs after heavy rains. It's not a good thing, a lot of water penetrating the building. Asphalt in poor condition, you can see it's riddled with cracks and been sealed over. And here we have chimney, it's in very poor condition as well. And the picture doesn't show it, but if you look closely, you can see there's four metal bands that are actually wrapped around the top of that chimney, helping hold it together. I'm not saying it's in danger of falling. It's just that it's a precaution the school district has done due to the condition of the chimney. So in summary, Hardlines, that did the original assessment, came up with a cost of $13.6 million to renovate this building. that is a 73% renovation versus replacement ratio. So you can see it's above the 66%, two-thirds. Sorry, I'm recovering from a cold, so the more I talk, the worse it's going to sound. So I talked to you about the A through W items. So this is a summary of our validation costs in the A through W, 23 items that are looked at that capture every building component. And I'll go through this one in more detail than compared to the others so you know really how to read it. So for any items that just the actual category line item. That means we didn't have any change to that category. We agreed, concurred with Hardline's cost. So you can see here, your item here, Laura's rules, we had no difference in opinion. However, if you see the dark black bold box, that indicates we had a cost increase in scope, and we updated the assessment to reflect the scope we felt was more accurate. The last color you see is the red. That indicates that we actually reduced that category cost. Now, what you're going to see in site condition for all the elementary schools that Hardlines did is going to be a reduction in the cost, and I'll tell you why. They made a very big error in the asphalt replacement and repaving line items. The web tool calculates that dollar amount on a cost per square yard. They mistakenly entered the quantity in square foot. So what that did, and they've done it before, what that did was it caused this line item to be 9 times more than it needed to be for asphalt resurfacing and replacement.
They didn't catch that themselves when they...
I'll tell you, and I probably should be, but the Hardlines, OSFC renews assessors firms every 3 years, and they've been, every validation I've had with them, this is occurring. The renewal contract was a few months ago, and we're dropped. That speaks volumes.
It's a miracle.
Okay, so, so with all that being said, we now have increased our renovation cost to $14.6 million. Okay, the last slide for Central, and we'll repeat this with the remaining schools, is I put together a cost comparison chart, and that kind of answers your question to reconciliation. So this is supposed to look green, but it looks yellow. That column represents Hardline's cost assessment. I also should point out, they did the assessment in the beginning of the year, which was still under 2016 cost set. In April, OSFC updated to 2017. So in all fairness to them, there were some items that just had the yearly cost update, that 2% I was talking about. So we're comparing their renovation cost at $13.6 million. We had a $15.2 million cost. So we take that and we divide that by the cost to replace to get our renovation versus rebuild percentage. So there's that 73% that we saw in the preceding slides. When you take our validation number and apply it to the same manner, you could see that we've had 82%. We are up to 82% renovation versus rebuild. The last column just shows the delta. We've increased the assessment cost by $1.5 million, which equates to about a 9% increase to the renovation versus rebuild ratio. And in all honesty, this is a pretty accurate number that we see for school districts. It's about 10%. We usually see an increase in the validation process. So now we'll go through the other schools at a quicker pace.
quick question.
Sure.
How many dollars per square foot do you end up using for a replacement cost?
Well, it's on a sliding scale based on elementary, middle, and high. The bigger the building, the less the cost is
in
per
our
square
case.
Foot. Well, it's probably around $240 a square foot, but I'll look it up at the end and confirm that with you. So let's look at Chippewa. Again, a few photos that show mechanical equipment in very poor condition. Large group restrooms, they lack ADA compliance. ADA is American Disabilities Act. Every large group restroom is supposed to have one toilet and toilet partition, as well as a sink and a urinal if it's a men's room that is ADA accessible. So that's what that picture is kind of showing here. And the bottom right, this is damaged asbestos flooring. See that it's chipped here. There's been pieces that's been replaced. So when you hear us people throw around the term VAT, that stands for vinyl asbestos tile, and that's what it is right there. Hardline's renovation cost was $9.7 million, $732,000. It was an 86% renovation versus replacement. Looking at our validation, to renovation cost at $9,700,000. So you can see here on the comparison chart, we reduced the overall cost, even though we increased much of the scope of work. The assessment was reduced by $23,000, $24,000. And that equates to a 1% drop in the renovation rebuild ratio. So now we're at 85%. Island, which we bought, was a very cool school, by the way. And hats off to Steve, head of maintenance. He's passionate about this building and the care of this building. So it was very cool to see somebody that engaged and proud of what he does. Toilet partitions appeared original. They're rusting in bad condition. What this picture is showing you is that the windows, so this is a typical classroom space right here. Four of the window panels, 1, 2, 3, 4 in that classroom have been boarded up. So it actually reduced the amount of natural light in the building, which we don't feel is a great thing. It's been proven that daylighting enhances student performance and test scores and so forth, and part of the LEED and energy movement is increasing your daylighting, which OSCC supports. This picture is just showing the front canopy rusting. This is due solely to salt having to be put down on the pavement during the winter months. So our hard lines renovation cost was 8.3. Again, another 73% renovation versus rebuild. If you look at our validation, we've increased many, many items here in the bold black. We've reduced 2 items. Overall, the cost increased to $9.6 million.
Is it correct that the replace cost is for an OFCC funded school?
Yes. It's the replacement cost is OFCC funded.
Which is likely not what Brecksville Broadview Heights would expect.
Well, it depends. I mean, if you're, are you talking
I would
about
suggest they're built more to a minimum standard that will be satisfactory in these two communities, having been involved in 70s in the prior district. And two that I'm working on in my next district right now, where they were designed to finance them at OFCC template square footages, dollar amounts, and that's insufficient. So we're looking at all the revenue sources in my next district. In my former district, we pre-planned up front and knew we weren't going to just build back then, OSFC, we weren't going to build the just OSFC template. It exceeded in Lakewood, Ohio. It will end up exceeding in Richfield, Mass. It likely will end up exceeding the Brecksville Broadview Heights. So I'm suggesting those replace numbers, if you were to consider that, as well.
And we can certainly take another look at that. Our task and our charge was to validate it based on OFCC standards because we're comparing apples to apples with the dollar value.
Right.
We're validating their numbers.
If they get to a bond issue, I just don't want
sure.
to see them go through what I am going through for financial.
It's painful, I know. It is painful.
So.
OSFC has come a long way. I'm not saying it's a perfect agency or a perfect system. In terms of the systems and the materials, they're kind of like on a level with Chevy. There's a kind of wood. It's not a Mercedes, and it's not a to this point type of mechanical, electrical system technology and so forth. But they've come a long way, especially in the earlier days. It's been a work in progress, and it's still a continuing progress to get these numbers and costs accurate. So looking at Highland, we have an increased cost of $1.2 million. We went from 73%, as shown earlier, renovation rebuild to 84%, which was an 11% increase. Okay, last elementary school is Hilton. Again, you start to see some typical things going on here at all the schools. The asphalt, which is, you know, a normal thing, it wears. Roof ponding, the roofs need to get some tapered insulation to help the flow of the water towards the roof drains. Casework in work condition. So their hard lines cost was $9.9 million and an 84% renovation versus rebuild. And again, the same thing at the other school is occurring here. We've added and increased the scope in some categories, but our site credit outweighs that, so we end up again with a very slight reduction in renovation cost to a tune of $232,000. So our renovation rebuild factor has gone down by 2%. last two schools, and keep in mind now Harrison Group is the assessor at the middle school. Some of the conditions documented were exterior doors in poor condition. Again, the roof ponding. We have some asbestos flooring, outdated systems, fire alarm, and non-compliant rails. This is like bringing it up to code. This picture shows here. Code requires these handrails to have this little extension at the top as well as at the bottom. The guardrails are not at the proper height for current code. And I'm not sure about the slat measurements. There's a 4-inch wall test. Everything else already knocked it as non-code compliant, so I didn't check the width. Harrison Group came up with $26.7 million in renovations, which was 62% renovation versus rebuild. So this was the only school that was originally under the two-thirds rule. It's not anymore. this school was the one that had the most cost increase. We now have a 31.8 renovation versus rebuild, 31.8 renovation cost.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I said Debbie Downer, but I was
hoping. I know. one of the things with the high school and the middle school I want to point out about why these costs were higher, it wasn't because the assessor did a poorer job than the other. The fact is that OSFC will only let you put in renovation costs for life safety items for spaces such as auditoriums. They don't co-fund them. But when meeting with Chris in the district, it was expressed, we want to see what we think it will really cost to renovate these auditoriums because we want to. Knowing the fact that it would be 100% of your dime, you wouldn't get 5% credit for that space. Auditoriums are expensive to renovate. The systems are expensive. The finishes are very expensive. So that was part of the reason for the cost increase. Not entirely, but it contributed. So you can see it was a 14% increase, which was pretty, it's higher than what we usually see. We are now at 76%. To combat the Debbie Downer thing, I would like to point out, if you've noticed, all the other schools are in the 80% renovation versus rebuild. This school's in the 70s. So.
Is that rebuild at the same square footage
it
as
is.
The current building?
Correct.
Which is also excessive capacity then for the 678 middle school.
Right, and the next step in this whole validation process and in the future with the committee and so forth, and we'll be giving the board updates, is to do capacity studies and site studies and fit tests.
Because that was built for high school. You're not three grades.
Right.
I haven't heard of a middle school being built for $43 million probably ever.
Right, and you have declining enrollment. Your right. enrollment has declined 24% in the last 10 years. So that obviously contributes to the excess. They call it excess square foot. The state will. So we're going to get to that.
Okay.
We'll look and see how we get better, if possible. Buildings to a better capacity. Last, the high school. Okay, so 20-year-old building, but it does have issues. We'll start off with the issue everyone's pretty much aware about is that the building has shown. Is that your question?
No.
Oh, well, that's in
yeah.
a hall, too, actually.
We have cracks.
Yeah, the building is moving. Why it's moving is currently being studied. You contracted the GPD group, structural engineer, to monitor over a period of time to see how significant the movement is, to make recommendations to correct it, if possible. So we're going to have to revisit this again in August. Hopefully that report will be out, and we'll know what the cost impact event is for this school. It also has a lot of water infiltration issues that we try to put a dollar amount on.
I was actually outside my room down the hall.
In the lockers.
Behind the lockers.
Yeah.
On some sort of the lake.
So, the original assessment, he just made a blanket statement. You need to get somebody out, take a look at it. Between Jeff and I, Jeff and Hamlin, we try to at least capture some dollar amount to be about the magnitude of the scope. So that is in there. But there are other items. You know, membrane roofs, this is 20 years old. It's a ballasted membrane system that needs to be replaced, and that's normal. So that chillers to reach its life expectancy and asphalt, of course. You have to resurface it every so many years. So with that being said, he had a 9.2 renovation cost, 13% renovation versus replacement. We've updated some items. eliminated a couple of ADA things that were just put in for convenience but aren't really necessary by code, and came to $14.1 million. And last slide, the increase of 4.8. Again, keep in mind, auditorium is part of that, certainly not all of it, but part of it. So we've increased from 13% to 21%, which is an 8% increase. Anybody else getting an award? All right. So with that, I'll open it up to Q&A.
Well, I guess. I guess just to set expectations too. I mean, we've had a couple of other studies done, and we've had some different options put on the table. But this is like if you needed to fix everything you could possibly find, that's what this
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
So this isn't you have to fix everything on the list. You can make choices just like a homeowner would do, and decide I'm not going to.
You can
spend $50,000 and fix every little thing.
It's like a roadmap, a guide for your renovations. The only thing I mean, add to that is if you do participate in OFCC, they will require you to do the full scope for every building. You can segment and pick and choose various buildings to be part of your project right now in ELP. So, but you have, let's say it's the high school, but you have to do all of the scope outline for the high school.
And that's to get the 5%.
That's to get the 5%. So that's another analysis.
And you've got to stay within their
design parameters.
Design parameters. And once you change a design parameter, you then on individual items, is it like an all or nothing thing, or do they say, okay, is it by building? Is it by?
What they'll do is you do some or all of the projects, and they can couple items. So the department's up, they're going to send another team out to come and validate what you did. So you just move that credit towards the heating system. I've had to do that.
So they look at each component in the A through Z or W list.
Yep, they'll go through and do another assessment in essence and report if the building was constructed to their standards.
So you could pick certain buildings and certain aspects of things to do, and then with OFCC, they'll just validate that other things you did. If you stayed compliant with their design guidelines,
correct,
then you're eligible for the
5%. Yep. Another string, the commission participating in the commission project, is they require you to be the buildings to be LEED Silver certified, so any of the buildings. The high school.
So explain what that means.
Well, there's United States Green Building Council, the USGBC, has certain levels of green design, the lowest being silver certification, so and then the highest being gold. Mid-ground is silver. So OSFC includes in their new construction budget, supposedly a 3% increase to the construction costs to account for the additional costs you will incur to achieve LEED Silver certification. So we have to have like so much water reduction. If the building was to be renovated, they take the baseline, we need to reduce it by 30%. We need to have an energy, certain energy savings to the building. Site amenities could be bicycle racks, bike pass through. There's a whole 650-page manual of items that you actually pick and choose based on your circumstances to achieve those improvements. So they will require that. The exception may be the high school because of the low renovation for school. I can't remember the exact number, but it may be exempt. Plus, we're not replacing the HVAC system, so you know, if they initially required us, we could get a waiver.
So with the OFCC reimbursement, do most districts use them and just hope that some of the, you know, a number of things that they pick meet within the design guidelines and they get something back? Or is there a certain scenario where it's like it's not even worth it to go
through OFCC.
Right. That's a choice you as a board. We need to give you the data and do some studies so we can present to you accurate comparisons for you to make. If part of the committee, I assume, would be part of that decision as well. I have seen school districts. I used to be an assessor for the state with a previous firm. So I have 15 years' experience doing master plans and assessments. But I also went out and did validations for the ELP program. I think the key is that you want to have a good architect that knows the design manual and is held accountable and to the task to meet the design manual. That's simple.
So our process moving forward, we're having a kickoff facilities committee meeting starting in August, and we'll be presenting this information and moving forward with some of our discussions.
Yeah, and between now and then, we're going to get started on looking at capacities, looking at sites, looking at all the other elements about educational adequacy. How does the building respond to your educational program that goes beyond these costs? If you want a more 21st century based learning environment where you have teachers collaborating in teams and you want them to be in more of a suite and we have to move walls and so forth, those are costs that we can put in. The assessment is called reprogramming, actually gets put in the master plan, but we can capture those to, you know, a reasonable level the commission will go by.
So I know this was just a high level, you know, flyover.
Yeah.
Is there, I'm assuming there's a more granular report that
there,
would that be?
Yes, the binding
not a hard
on
copy
my floor, but yes, and I can, actually Chris has, and I can give anyone else who would like access to the Dropbox that the commission created, so it's not only in the web tool, which is you can't get into it, it's restricted, only we can, but he put them on Dropbox so that you can access those full reports, and I can also email them to you if that's easier, as well as the validation letters that outline what we changed.
Okay. Are those studies available to the public or just the board?
It is a public document. It's a state agency. It is public. How the district chooses to share that is up to you.
Just one last question or maybe a comment. But in your presentation at one point you said our enrollment declined 24% over the last 10 years. I'm not sure if that number's high. I think it's like
18. Yeah,
I think that's a little north of where we really are. So I just want to make sure.
We
want to vet that because I don't want that in a paper that says, you know, we've been on. Because that's an important number to get right.
Yeah, I do have the calculations in the binder if you want. I can share them with you when we're done or now, however. But we did look at it. And we have some graphs to support that. Okay. But you're not unusual. I mean, it's happening across the state.
Oh, right. No, I know. I know we've been declining.
Yeah. State of Ohio is eighth in terms of an exodus of families and students leaving. So we're pretty high up there statewide.
I think on this topic, for the benefit of the folks here this evening, we stated before that this is going to be a lengthy process. This process will involve the community at every step along the way. This is one of the early stage things that we're using to gather information. And we look forward to many more such studies, bringing in experts. This board is not expert in construction as we move down this process. And we look forward to it being a very fruitful and well thought out one.
Thanks.
Administrative reports, these are end of year reports. Chris Code is not able to be with us this evening, so we are going to move right to Brian.
Good evening. It was a busy year in HR this year. We had a lot of things happening this year, not to mention negotiations, which I'll start at the bottom a little bit. So we spent a lot of time settling agreements with BOSS, VEA, Administrative Support Administrators. We have used ASOP for years, which is our online reporting that teachers can get into and report off absences, special leave, sick leave. We this year put administrators in, so we can now follow our administrators as they report off, they put in vacation time. Anything that reflects them being out of the district or utilizing them for their contract. it's beneficial from the standpoint that we will be able to better monitor how people use their sick leave and how people use their professional leave. And it gives them the opportunity that they can also monitor themselves. So if they question, I thought I had two personal leaves up last year, and I was able to agree to take that person to the front line. This year we did finally get a OSIS policy in place, along with that was OSIS, which is the new counselor evaluation system that was designed by Cloud for Education. And we have in place this year. This is the first year of counselors that we have been trained through OED. They received training. They really want to help out for the most part of the counselors. I know they're very good counselors, but it was the first time I've been very well. So we monitor both teacher evaluation, counselor evaluations, and principal evaluations. We utilized that system this year. Really maintained it. There were some shifts. And there's little things that happen as retirements come, and you have to monitor and make sure people are in and out and inside of the department buildings. Looking at EMFMLA, which is something we're currently piloting, and FMLA is a lot of paperwork, a lot of processing, a lot of man hours, and it's a lot of communication between my department and payroll. EFMLA is an online system that basically takes all of the forms and keeps them updated at all times. It saves us time because both payroll and us will have access to all the FMLA forms that people utilize. We can also send the forms out electronically. So we start to streamline the process a little bit more, and we don't have to do as much follow through as reminders are automatically sent and tell us, hey, this person hasn't returned yet. And we can actually get to the point where we can start sending the forms directly to the doctor's office, and rather than giving it to the employees, the doctor can call them out and send them directly to them. We did Background Investigation Bureau this year, which was our background investigations, our volunteer background checks that we did this year. We had over 350 people go through background checks this year. I would say that we had very good returns, so that's the great thing about it, although there are some people that are not very good drivers. But for the most part, it really went off well. And it is another great tool because, again, our principals can run reports. Our principals can see who is volunteering in their building. Also, they also receive volunteer badges, which are valid for 3 years. So when somebody comes in to volunteer, they can show their badge automatically. They know that they've got approved. And you can set it up that they could be in one building and maybe start off at the Chippewa. But we have kids at Central and Middle School and High School, and they'll automatically show in each one of those buildings where they're volunteering, so the principal has access to see whether or not they're approved. Like I said, contracts, and we continue to monitor staffing. We have some continual changes happening with staffing. As we do every year, we try to look at enrollment, which is a direct reflection of how we staff, and as enrollment drops, we continue to monitor where we can reduce staff so that we don't have to have RIFLAs continuing year after year, and we look at how we service kids and where we can increase when we need to and decrease when we have to. So pretty much HR in a nutshell this year. Question?
I have.
Sounds so easy.
Yeah. It was a little stressful at times, but we did it.
So you talked about the principals doing background checks. And do we do background checks on parent volunteers who help out with sports?
Sports is different. If they're volunteering for a sport, we run a different background check. So, for example, if they have, in the contract four coaches for football, and then they say, well, we want a fifth person to volunteer, we still ask the coaches, and this is where we count on the coaches and the athletic directors to tell us if somebody's volunteering. And if they are, you'll notice when we do our sheets, they'll say volunteer. If we have a notification that somebody's volunteer, we run them through a separate background check, which is actually the same thing that teachers go through for their licensing.
So should all parent volunteers for sports be board approved?
Yes, I would say.
Okay.
If not board approved, at least ensure that they have their background check. And if they're going to be unsupervised, they should do complexity permits.
And who's in charge of that?
Well,
who's in charge of making
sure
here
lies the problem. A lot of times what happens is coaches say, hey, yeah, why don't you come help out, and we'll, you know, you can help out and run, and then we're not aware of it until maybe two-thirds of the season's over or something of that nature. If we know about it, we put them on the board agenda, and we say, hey, Mark, I'll say the athletic director, hey, we got this person volunteering. And we keep a Google Doc with everybody that we know, and basically the Google Doc has whether they had concussion training, whether they have their people activity, whether or not they have their first aid or CPR, and we monitor that. And then that's the way that we approve the activity permits.
Okay.
So can somebody volunteer without us knowing about it? Yes. If we find out about it and they were not board approved, then we work through the proper channel and say, hey, we tell the coaches, hey, you have to make sure that they get their required requirements. So. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Gina?
All the way in the back. I guess I'm not sure where to stand, but to stand here and do my cafeteria voice. I'll start with gifted because I think my department's kind of in three sections, at least how I configured it in my head. So I'll start with gifted because I think we had probably the most changes in that out of the other parts of my department. What we did this year is we had a focus group and we did some pros and cons of the current program and where we also felt that we might want it to move toward because we wanted input. It included administrators, teachers, and the parents in the community. We do plan to follow up with them again in the fall just to see how they feel things went. We're trying to capture as many students that meet the eligibility criteria as possible. And what I mean by that is to service more kids and give them that opportunity for that rigorous and challenging curriculum if it's appropriate for them. We're also, though, trying to reduce all of the continual rolling testing. The Ohio Department of Education says a parent can make a request to test, but we're trying to streamline that and have certain windows of time where there's testing. But this year we did universal grade level testing. We tested every second grader and every fifth grader. We did cognitive ability and an achievement test for all of our second graders because we want to capture that superior cognitive score. And we also wanted to capture a score on subject specific. But then we also administer the Iowa achievement again in fifth grade because achievement is something that you can grow. Your IQ pretty much stays the same within an 8-point margin of error in either direction once it's solidified. But achievement, you can grow it. So that's why we thought fifth grade again to see if we could capture some other students that might be subject gifted. So, that being said, we did that. We got all of the letters, all the notifications out to those parents. We provided that information to the third grade teachers and to the administrators at the K-3 buildings, also to the same entities I just listed at Central and at our middle school. Another advantage to doing the whole grade testing at those grade levels is because our goal is, again, not to keep testing and testing kids, they get tested enough. That by if they are subject specific gifted in that fifth grade Iowa or even in the second grade Iowa, then when they get to sixth grade and have the opportunity, for example, to go into the accelerated science in seventh grade, they don't have to take yet another test in just science as sixth graders. So we're also getting better and better at inputting the data in the EMIS and tracking that so that we can better say whether a parent requests it or a teacher or someone says, what about this kid? We can say, well, that kiddo was identified way back in second grade with a superior cognitive IQ score. And for whatever reason, maybe the parent chose not to put them in the program or the student didn't want to be in it. But then as they matriculate up into the grades, they had a certain interest and then they wanted to pursue that. So that is kind of the overview of the gifted. That was the testing piece. Then we looked at delivery of service. Because the Ohio Department of Education says districts have to identify, no district is required to serve. So probably I think our biggest shift for people, because change is never, you know, comfortable, was we are going to provide push-in and or pull-out enrichment for the English Language Arts and for the math at
all three of our K-3 buildings for third graders versus the self-contained in a separate building. That we really feel is best for kids. We're not moving them from their neighborhood school if they've been there since kindergarten. It also gives us an opportunity to service more kids that might be English language arts only or math only. That will be in collaboration with, we identified teachers with input from the principals. They will be cluster grouped into a class, a third grade class, and that third grade teacher will work in collaboration with a gifted intervention specialist to develop those lessons and make sure that it has rigor and that it's enrichment and not just more in addition to what they're doing in the classroom. We also had talked throughout this process about the social emotional component of students that are identified as gifted. So we're looking at things like lunch buddies and different components like that to address that social emotional. And also we're still working out the details to have an after school science club for third, fourth, and fifth graders as well. We're still working out those details, and as we know them, we'll make sure everybody knows about those. We're also looking at, haven't established a date, but we have met with the administrators and with the teachers involved in that change in how we're delivering the services to also make sure we communicate as often as possible with as many entities as possible. So we are planning to have a parent meeting before the school year starts, particularly for the third grade parents to explain how it's going to look and give some more specific examples. We also talked a lot about professional development. One of the outshoots of that focus group was some of the teachers that teach in the general ed classrooms. They said, we'd really like more information on how to enrich. So we have, in fact, they're there now. We have a team of the teachers that will be teaching in that enrichment, that push and enter, pull out, and our gifted intervention specialist, third through middle school representatives. I believe there are six of them down there at William & Mary at a summer institute to learn more about the William & Mary English Language Arts curriculum. We also are planning to have a representative come on site before the school year starts. I put a couple of dates out that worked for the people at William & Mary, and then the people that would be involved, we kind of did a consensus of whichever of the dates the majority went with, because the input was they really would prefer to do it before the school year starts so that they can really get in front of it to be able to implement. So that's where we are with that. I have these nice little bullets. I thought this would be super quick, but then it always mushrooms because there are so many things that I think of about it as we're talking. Transitioning into special education, we did a study and an analysis on different companies, and we decided that due to space, but because we have to keep student records forever and ever, we are digitizing prior documents. The current ones, we still have in hard copy. Part of that was cost effectiveness. Also, some of it is just being able to grab that original signature page. Sometimes when it becomes a legal component, is just something that we can't totally avoid. We started when we approved this, and or you approved it, thank you, and we implemented. We started at the high school because they had boxes and boxes and years of files, so we're slowly making headway with that. And Georgia in the guidance department was like resistant at first, but she's like, oh, wow. I think she felt like it was so big at some point. So that was that component. Preschool, we had to step up to quality. That's been around for a couple of years, but it was on a rolling site component, depending on what cycle you were in as a district. But it involved a lot of uploading of documents and reports prior to the site visit, and then they just swoop in unannounced into the preschool, and they look at a variety of different aspects from staffing and their professional development to the quality of the curriculum and safety and student aesthetics within the building. And the minimum rating expected is a 3-star, and it's not just for preschools, but it's even for preschool and the living there along that line. Of course, we don't have to settle for this back there. And we were 2.5 stars, so we did get that. And I know that Cynthia already acknowledged that, but I wanted to make sure that that was said again, because a lot of parents on the part of the people, and we appreciate her recognizing that. Program, we have a lot of different programs that are going on, but I really wanted to highlight, because I don't know if everyone's aware,
and, you know, get some of that compliment that said, let's go bowling, let's go out to eat, let's go to Starbucks. And it's been around for a long time, and it originally started for that purpose, but also to provide students with an opportunity to practice that social communication that is a part of skill to teach. So, for example, we know, that when you're at a tennis
going to the apartments is a good idea. Appreciate it.
Pardon me?
I think going to the apartments is a great idea.
Yeah, we thought we'd give it a try.
It's worth a shot.
Did you want to do something?
I want to get her picture. Bonnie, can I get your picture since Kathy isn't here with Heather before?
We want to get your picture, too.
Family?
Oh, sorry. Oh,
you want
to get your plaque and Bonnie.
So much for
speaking. You got to be quicker to get out of here.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not letting you get out of here.
Jerry, what time are you?
You're with us.
Oh, you want to get on the side? Okay.
It's okay. Look at Bella. Okay.
Jerry.
What town are you headed to? I'll see you on Facebook.
Oh, cool. Very nice.
Where are you going to be?
Good beaches.
Maryland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we'll be on the East Coast, 45 minutes east of Orlando.
Cool.
So, yeah, come visit.
Good luck.
All right.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. Let's move on to number six, community communications, hearing of the public. Anybody wish to be heard this evening? Well, I'll dispense with reading this, and hearing none, move on to number seven. Thank you. Board member committee reports, 7A, financial liaison audit.
Nothing.
Awesome. PI, other than?
Yeah, sure, we right heard there. That, yeah.
Oh, I think.
Better not have any transportation appeals this time of year.
Nope, not one.
Policy, we haven't. Nope.
Not we'll I have some questions I met with her.
Thank you. BCC?
Well, I do have something to say. So we had a 2-month process for a superintendent search, and I am happy to say that we have approved a wonderful choice who is here today, and I'd like to introduce you to him. Mr. Mangus, would you please stand up? This is our new superintendent at CPC. Dave, you want to say a little bit about yourself?
Well, Dave Mangus, as introduced, thank you. And just very excited to be in the area. I'm looking forward to having Kyle Valley part of the Bristol School District as collaboration and also listening to what you're doing.
Thank you.
Very
excited.
Welcome.
Yes. So, Dave, currently we came down to 8 candidates. We had a lot of applications, a lot of external candidates. One internal, who is Mr. Mangus. And we wanted to make sure we reached pretty far out, and it came down to 2, you know, an external and internal. And really, Dave just brought so much to the table that we just are very, very excited. And just looking forward to a great partnership for all of our districts. And that's it. So, yeah.
Thank you for joining us. Any other reports from the board? Number 8 is other board business.
Item A on there, the 2018-2019 district calendar. We had met as a calendar committee that is comprised of members of BEA, BOSS, administration, and we developed 2 drafts to a potential calendar for 18-19. One of the things that we heard when I started was that we don't get calendars approved far enough in advance. Some people were concerned about that. So we really said, as one of our goals on this calendar committee, was to try to get ahead of that and get as many calendars. It is on right now for a public hearing to talk about if anyone would like to discuss it. It is not being voted on tonight. That is because when the state made a change from a required number of days to hours, what they left in the statute, they said that if you are going to propose a calendar that is going to be any less student days than the calendar year before, you must hold a public hearing 30 days prior to the board. So the proposed calendar for the 2018-2019 has 2 less student days than what we will meet in 2017-2018, which is why we have the need for the public hearing. The calendar will be voted on in July. Those 2 less days are less student days, but they are not less staff days. The idea is to embed some professional development, high-quality professional development within the context of the calendar. We also have a professional development committee that is comprised of the same groups from BEA, administration, and BOSS that will be developing those professional development agendas for those 2 days in the 18-19 calendar. We will develop it collaboratively and then to be implemented in that following calendar. So
That is the reason you see it on here, but we are not voting on it this evening. The board can take action on it in July. Item B are all of the updates to board policy due to either revisions.
Excuse me, Joelle, I missed something, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but we needed a motion to enter this. May I have a motion, please? My bad.
So moved.
Second.
Please continue. Thank you.
Item B is all of the updates to board policy that were presented to us in February. We met as a board policy committee in March. We went over them, and then they got on the calendar after we did some revisions. You had a first reading on them, so this tonight you can board approve those if you choose.
That's it.
Questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernhardt?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Item number 9 is the superintendent's announcement, please.
Two quick announcements. One, I just hope that everyone is enjoying some time off this summer. And I'd also just like to recognize Dave Martin, one of our principal at Hilton Elementary. He was just published in an OAESA journal. He wrote a very nice article on how to incorporate technology into the curriculum. I printed out a hard copy. I will pass it around if you'd like to read it. But congratulations to him. It's quite an honor to get published anywhere. But especially to be recognized by your peers in one of his organizations, their monthly newsletter. So congratulations to Dave.
Thank you. Number 10, superintendent's consent agenda consisting of items A through D, tabs 2 through 5. May I have a motion?
So moved. Second.
Just your typical monthly recommendations, both in certified, classified, and your supplemental, which are mostly, there are some scatterings of other things throughout the school year, but mostly for fall supplementals. And we have a contract with Andrew Numbers, who does a lot of our photography work for the upcoming school year, who bills hourly. And should you approve, I have some comments after your vote.
Questions or comments? Roll call.
Mrs. Bernhardt?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0.
I would like to congratulate Beth Keir on her retirement. She has served 19 years at Central Elementary School. Central Elementary School is one of our teachers. Also, best wishes to Lizbeth. I can't say my last name. From Marnie.
Oh, wait.
Marnie. And Denise Keller. 13 years and 16 years of service to our district, so best wishes to them in their retirement as well.
One more to add to that, Marjorie, one of our bus drivers for an extended period of time, yeah, sent a very nice note saying thank you very much. She did. 11 is our superintendent's business, items A through Q, tabs 6 through 21 for your reading enjoyment. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Go for it.
Okay, as quick as I can. Items A through E are annual handbook adoptions for you to adopt. I'm going to skip and put these together. Items F and I are for services in our extended school year program, which is our services that we provide over the summer for our special needs kids. Items G and H are yearly contracts with the Educational Service Center for a student that we have placed in PEP and then for consult services through PEP. Item I, transportation agreement, is a yearly transportation agreement that we look at to transport some of our special needs students that are receiving their services elsewhere outside of the district. Items K and L are course fees for the upcoming school year. Item M is a approval for textbook adoption. We have a new textbook recommendation for our German. You have a copy in front of you for you to look at. Item N is for a student that would like to enroll on a tuition basis. Their family is currently looking for residency within our district, but because the student is a freshman, wants their child to start off, so they're requesting tuition payment until such time that they find a house located within our district. Item O is our annual liability insurance. Item P is our to purchase 2 passenger buses. These are replacement buses. We are actually taking 3 out of the rotation and replacing them with 2 new buses. We're not replacing all of 3. And item Q are donations to the school in the form of a flute to the high school and a monetary donation to our Maker Club at Highland Elementary.
in a case where we have a tuition student and everything's not in good faith, understood, how long does it, until you review it, I mean, living in Idaho, understand?
So kids can pay tuition on a yearly basis, so,
okay.
You know,
so it's a year-long commitment.
It's a year-long commitment for tuition. At what point in that school year that they can determine the residency, then we can stop the tuition, but it is billed on a yearly basis, except by the state, it's not a total amount.
Right.
Typically paid monthly.
Yes.
Thank you.
Do we have an opportunity to sell those buses at all? Because I know the service department in Rugby Heights does that, so do we sell?
We sell the buses.
We do?
On site, we have application. We've had buses that have been purchased and gone as far as the mission fields in Africa.
Really?
And we have found, yes, there's a gentleman who has bought, I believe, three in the past because his brother is a missionary in one of the African countries. And he has bought buses of ours to go over there. Mm-hmm. And we typically get more through bus movers, even net after their commission, than we did on trade. And Larry put that in place to start using them. It's a service offered through Ohio Schools Council. So we've been doing that at least for all the 5 years I've been
That's
here.
Great.
We don't get a lot of money. When you pay 80 cents, you get five or six grand.
That's better than just grabbing them, though.
Correct. In the school,
and
yeah.
It's better than the trades were by probably doubling what a trade value would be on some of those. So it helps a little bit. And it goes to some good places.
School buses in South America, I know that, you know, or U.S. buses. They're just, you know, old Honduras had a bunch of them. I was down there last time. Mm-hmm. I know Brazil buys that stuff. So
I can tell you, people in Oregon, some people live in them. So that's where the what the
Rick Fillmore knows that story better than I do. He shared it with me, but it was a very, very neat story as to what was happening with those buses. It was all the brother connected.
Oh, that's wonderful.
With the effort,
it was a great story.
Okay, thank you.
Bundle it in with all those Cleveland Indians championship t-shirts they printed.
That's right. Those World Series shirts, they're
right
there too.
Roll call, please.
I have one.
This is Bernauer?
Yeah.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Number 12, Treasurer's Consent Agenda Items A through F, tabs 22 through 25. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
The appropriation modification, and it really won't matter much, but assuming you approve item C, because the item C is a compilation of all of the appropriation modifications we approved throughout the year, it's easiest, best, simplest when we get the audit time for we can present the auditor with one document. He told me before, I'm only slightly embarrassed. So item A, our fund 200 outdoor student activities, they either have cash or they don't have funds. So they have more than sufficient amounts of cash for that to occur. So that's that one. Item B, the transfers. Those are annual transfers. The amounts do vary from year to year based upon the profitability of our wrestling tournament, as well as our concession sales through athletics. Those funds are then transferred over to our athletic fund for our general operations. I call it the 350 athletic accounts, like a general fund of our sports. Item C, as I mentioned, is a compilation of all the appropriation amendments we have to this is the appropriation last June through this one here tonight. It'll be a culmination document for audit purposes, I mentioned. FY18 appropriations measure, while all of the funds are included in there, for budgeting purposes, you know the modifications happen throughout the year as grant allocations change, student activity needs arise. Grants are received, local grants through our foundation, other places. The general fund being the one of greatest interest because it's the bulk of our dollars, $46.7 million. That would be eerily similar to what we just approved last month in the May forecast. lot of line item shift in that as we get to the final numbers, but the expenditure budget side of that is very much in line with that forecast that you approved. And the financial report for May, the variances on the revenue side, because we had, that was done early in May, we had 10 months of actual data. So we did have some variances in our all other operating revenue, primarily from Medicaid reimbursements that we were expecting not to receive until July in the forecast, and they happened to come in this year. We weren't expecting those, so that's a timing on those payments. We always see PPP fees and things like that fluctuate as we get to the end of the school year, because graduation tends to help us collect at the end of school year in cases. The workers' comp, as you heard us talk before, we've had very good success with the retrospective rating program. So we've received some refund rebates through that program. Also, workers' comp in general, if you follow the media, has done very, very well in the balances that they have in reserves. So they've been issuing refunds. And I expect more of those to happen for both of those reasons next year, beyond what's in the forecast. So we don't really budget expecting those to occur, because there are no guarantees they do occur, because if we get a bad claims year, we'll be paying more into that retrospective rating program than we will get back out of it. So it's $20,000, not a lot in the scope of what we do, but more than zero. Personnel services, we will be issuing final retroactive payments for our contract settlements in June. I do anticipate we will have some overage in that anyhow, to a positive variance. Fringes are connected to that in many ways, because there's a fixed fringe amount attached to those wage payments. So that's a lot of that variance, certainly not all. The purchase services, supplies, those budgets are out there to be spent. They don't get spent typically. You recall I reduced those $300,000 in the forecast. It's still going to be a little bit high. Overall, I guess I'd rather tell you we're favorable variance there at the end of the year than negative variance, but I'd also like to get it at zero, and that's probably not going to happen in my lifetime, but it's a valiant effort. So that we overall are about 417 favorable. Some of that will spend down likely on the personnel services side. I know we will have additional carryover beyond what's forecasted projected in our purchase services, supplies, other objects lines. Those were not all spent. I can see that at this point in time for June activities. So we'll have a little better carryover than we had anticipated.
Questions or comments?
Awfully close to a bigger number.
Yeah, but I was able to update it 10 months, so it looks a little better when you have 10 months of actual. I get a little better when I'm up close.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you.
The addition to our agenda for this evening is to enter into executive session for the purpose of discussing
employment
or compensation of a public employee or official per board policy 0166 item A. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. We'll be in executive session. We'll take a little break. There'll be no other public business conducted this evening. Thanks very much for spending your time with us this evening.
Thank you.
Summer.
Happy summer.
Happy summer.
My mom's going to take us to the airport, so we're all good to go.
Oh, good.
We'll take that too.